Come with me, take my hand and we'll live
in a land where the river runs free, in a land through the green country, in a land to a shining sea.
Come in to Aunt Sally's Story Shop. Oh, Skedaddle, are you hurt?
No, I'm all right.
Here, let's pick up these cookie cans. You and Tulip may hang your sweaters on the hooks over there. My, those hooks are a little dusty, aren't they? Well, never mind. Just dust a couple off for yourselves.
Whose red coat is this, Aunt Molly?
I'm glad you asked me that, Skedaddle. That Red Riding Hood belongs to Little Red Riding Hood. I'm sure you've heard of her.
Sure. Is Lead Fighting Wood here? I'd love to see her.
Not yet, my friend. But just you and Tulip sit down, and I'll get my bonnet. Then you'll see. Foxtail? Ah, there you are. Come on now, move. I need this bonnet more than you do right now. You can sleep on my lap instead.
Wow.
That's a good cat. This bonnet is aching to give us a story. I'll just settle myself down and fix this hat.
And we'll begin our first story in just a moment.
You've probably heard of Marin Teacher's Store. It's been in San Rafael for years, but you may not know the Marin Teacher's Store isn't just for teachers. It's a store for kids, too, and people who like kids. They have an experienced sales staff who can help you select the perfect gifts or educational tools for kids from toddlers to teens. They've got the latest titles and books and albums and toys and puzzles, and even Marin's biggest selection of scratch and sniff stickers. That's Marin Teacher's Store, 508 4th Street in San Rafael, between Irwin and Grand.
Now then, are you children ready?
Yes.
Good. I'm glad you two are on the couch, because I want you to relax and close your eyes. Forget all your cares and worries, and try to imagine we are going back in time. Gone are skyscrapers, television, and cars. People live in small villages, which are surrounded by pasture land with cows and sheep, and forests with wild animals in them. Woodcutters work in the forests, and so begins our story. Once upon a time, there lived in a certain village a little girl and her mother. In another village close by lived the grandmother of this little girl. Now the grandmother loved this little girl so much that she made her a beautiful little red coat and hood to be worn when riding on a cart or on horseback, or even when she was just out walking. So much did the little girl like this coat that she wore it all the time and soon came to be called Little Red Riding Hood. One day, Little Red Riding Hood's mother called her in from play.
Go, my dear, and see how thy grandmamma does, for I hear she's been very ill. Carry her this custard and this little pot of butter.
I will go right away, mother.
You must go through the woods, but there are many woodcutters there, so if you have trouble or lose your way, you may ask one of them.
Yes, mother, I will be all right.
As she was going through the wood, she met with old Mr. Wolf, who had a very great mind to eat her up, but he dared not because of some woodcutters nearby in the forest.
Whither are you going, little girl?
I am going to see my grandmamma and carry her a custard and a little pot of butter from my mamma.
Does she live far off?
Aye, it is beyond that mill you see there, at the first house in the village.
Well, I'll go and see her too. I'll go this way and go you that, and we shall see who will be there soonest.
The wolf ran off as fast as he could go, taking the nearest way, while Little Red Riding Hood went by the longest way about. She also spent time gathering nuts, running after butterflies, and making bouquets of little flowers she met with. The wolf was not long before he got to the old woman's house.
Who's there? Your grandchild, Little Red Riding Hood. I've brought you a custard and a little pot of butter sent you by Mama. Pull the bobbin and the latch will go up.
Well, the wolf pulled the bobbin and the door opened, and presently he fell upon the good woman and ate her up in a moment, for it had been more than 3 days since he had eaten. He then shut the door and went into the grandmother's bed, expecting Little Red Riding Hood any moment.
Who's there?
My, that doesn't sound like Grandmama, but who else could it be? I guess she just sounds that way because of her cold. 'Tis your grandchild, Little Red Riding Hood, who has brought you a custard and a little pot of butter from Mama.
Pull the bobbin and the latch will go up. Put the custard and the little pot of butter upon the stool, and come and sit beside me, my dear.
Little Red Riding Hood went to sit beside the bed, where she was greatly surprised to see how her grandmother looked.
Grandmama, what great arms you have!
That is the better to hug thee, my dear.
Grandmama, what great eyes you have!
It is to see thee better, my child.
Grandmama, what great teeth you have!
That is to eat thee up!
So saying, the wicked wolf fell upon Little Red Riding Hood and would have eaten her up if a woodcutter had not come in just at that very moment and chopped off his head. Then who should climb out of the old wolf's body but Grandmama?
Grandmama!
Red Riding Hood!
Now what do you think of that, Skedaddle?
Pretty good. I know a version of that story. Well, the wolf is a vacuum cleaner salesman, and he comes into Grandma's house, see? And instead of eating her up, vacuums her up.
That's what I call a fractured fairy tale. But you know, there are many, many ways of telling fairy tales. That's because fairy tales were not written down for a long, long while. And each time someone told the story, they would change it a little. Some of the first people to write fairy tales were two brothers whose last name was Grimm.
We've got to take a break right now, but stay tuned. We'll have more of Aunt Sally's Story Shop in just a moment.
You've probably heard of Marin Teacher's Store. It's been in San Rafael for years, but you may not know the Marin Teacher's Store isn't just for teachers. It's a store for kids, too, and people who like kids. They have an experienced sales staff who can help you select the perfect gifts or educational tools for kids from toddlers to teens. They've got the latest titles in books and albums and toys and puzzles, and even Marin's biggest selection of scratch and sniff stickers. That's Marin Teacher Store, 508 4th Street in San Rafael, between Irwin and Grand.
Listen, do you hear carousel music? My, my, there must be a circus in town. How exciting! Skedaddle, could you please look outside and see if there's a parade?
Sure, Aunt Mally. Aunt Sally. Come here, Aunt Sally. It's Princess Tamapa. She's wearing one of her beaded leather dresses, and she's leading a parade.
Well, what do you think of that? It certainly is Princess Tamapa. And look at who's with her. Let's see, there are clowns and musicians, trapeze artists, and even a cage with some wild animals. Hello, Princess Tamalpa! She sees a skedaddle, Tulip, and here she comes with everyone following.
Good morning, Aunt Sally and Skedaddle. Good morning, girls and boys. Isn't it a grand day for a parade?
Yes, but where did you find all the circus people?
Why, from Fantasyland. That's where I went to find a story. It's one I heard when I was a young girl, and it stayed with me ever since. So I thought I'd find it again and share it with all of you.
What a wonderful idea, Princess Tamaltha.
The story was written by Ruth Ainsworth, and it's about the Phantom Carousel. There once was a boy named Silas. He had lived on a farm with his father and mother till he was 3. Then his parents were killed in a car accident, and he was taken to live with his Uncle Walter and Aunt Ellen in a crowded, smoky town. Silas remembered his mother as someone with a cloud of fair hair and a sweet scent, and his father as someone of immense height and strength, who sometimes swung him up onto the back of Blossom, the workhorse, and held him there. These memories were fostered by the photograph of his mother, which stood by his bed, and a snapshot of himself on Blossom. But Blossom's memory was kept green in another way, too. Every year, a fair came to the town, and Silas could hear the music of the carousel as he lay in bed at night. First of all, Uncle Walter took him to the fair on Saturday afternoon. The horses on the carousel were shaped like real horses, differing in color and expression. The first time Silas had a ride, his uncle said,
"Which will you have? They're all much the same."
But to Silas, they were completely individual. Some looked sly, others even vicious. Some were proud, and others were friendly. Each one had its name painted on a band on its forehead.
"Which one is this called, Uncle?"
"Pegasus. Hurry up. Which shall it be?"
"Pegasus, please."
And he was promptly lifted onto the painted saddle. Pegasus was a particularly fiery, spirited steed with a coal black mane and tail and a red saddle. There was a tuft of hair springing up between his ears, and his eyes showed their whites in a curious manner. When the music started up, Pegasus gathered his strength and leaped forward, Silas clinging fast. The music was rousing and martial, and Silas pretended he was riding at the head of his men, leading a charge. He felt Pegasus's sides warm and throbbing, and saw the breath from his dilated nostrils. When his uncle lifted him down, he was in a daze of happiness.
"Another ride, please! I don't want any pocket money for weeks, for months. You can keep it, but I must ride Pegasus again."
Silas was usually such a quiet little boy that his uncle was impressed.
"All right. You're a good little fellow."
The next ride was better yet. Silas felt warmth coming from Pegasus's painted sides and even heard his labored breath. Pegasus's ears twitched and his mane felt coarse and living. The ride was quickly over, but something kept Silas from asking for a third turn. He didn't want to push his luck too far. The fair stayed only 2 nights. As Silas lay in bed, he listened to the music, and in his dreams he rode Pegasus once more. In the 12 months before the fair visited again, Silas dreamed regularly that he was riding his beloved Pegasus, and he often tried to draw him. One of his efforts was pinned up at school, and his teacher told him that Pegasus had been a winged horse. The second visit to the fair was even more memorable than the first. Silas was bigger and stronger and had saved his pocket money for weeks in preparation.
"Okay, off we go. Just one ride, mind you."
Silas pressed his pocket money into his uncle's hand without a word. His uncle counted it carefully.
"You can have, let me see, 6 rides, unless they have gone up since last year. Will you be all right if I go and have a try at the shooting gallery?"
"Yes, Uncle, I'll be all right."
At first he could not see Pegasus, but then a low whinny caught his ear. Pegasus slightly turned his head and moved his ears, welcoming his old friend. He was not as glossy as he had been a year ago, but he was still proud and spirited and full of life. The price had gone up, as his uncle had feared, but his money paid for 4 rides, each a marvelous experience. This time Silas rode over open country, jumping hedges and ditches and gates. Sometimes Pegasus's hoofs floundered in mud, and sometimes they rang on frozen ground. clouds sailed by, branches swayed, birds wheeled, while they galloped in perfect freedom. By the end of the fourth round, Pegasus was sweating slightly, and his mighty chest heaved. Silas's pale cheeks were flushed, and he, too, was short of breath.
Till next year.
He gave Pegasus a farewell pat.
Don't forget me.
But the following year, the fair never came.
Packed up, I shouldn't wonder. It was on its way out last time.
Silas suffered in silence, thankful that Pegasus still came to him in his dreams. The next year, the fair still made no appearance, but Pegasus's dream visits continued. Then, the next year, the fair reappeared in all its glory. All the old favorites and many new ones, said the notices. Silas was now 11. He had a bicycle, and his aunt was not too fussy about where he went, as long as he was home before dark. On the first evening of the fair, Silas was there in good time, seeking the carousel. But the painted horses were gone. In their place were cars and airplanes, and Silas had no inclination to try either of these. He felt a lump in his throat, and his eyes smarted. Yet, in spite of almost everything being new, the man in charge was the same.
Where are the old horses?
Oh, scrapped. Done for. We must move with the times like everyone else.
What do you mean by done for? Do you mean burned?
Maybe they ought to have been burned, but the old horses are stored in a barn not far from here. Somehow I hadn't the heart to let them go.
Exactly. Where is the barn, sir?
At a village called Whitestones, about 20 miles away. But why do you want to know? You're not up to any mischief, are you?
I mean no harm. I just liked to ride on Pegasus when I was a little kid.
Silas moved away, his mind busy. He must see Pegasus again. He found Whitestones on a map at the public library and drew the route on a piece of paper. When an opportunity came, he would bicycle there. It must be a fine day or his aunt would fuss, and he mustn't arouse any suspicions. He had waited 3 years, so he could wait a little longer. The next Sunday was sunny. Silas got up early, pumped up his tires, packed some bread and cheese and an apple, and left a note on the kitchen table for his aunt. It was a blue summer morning with a few fleecy clouds blowing. Silas seldom went into the country, but he enjoyed all he saw, the black and white cows, the sheep, and the odd dog or cat going quietly about its business. He dreamed once during the previous night, but not really about Pegasus. He dreamed he was in a field, and nearby was a barn, almost falling to pieces, but it had a new tin roof. From inside came the sound of a horse whinnying and the stamp of a horse's hoofs. He woke before he had tried the door. When he reached Whitestones, it was 11 o'clock. He'd been cycling for nearly 3 hours, and his legs ached. He ate the bread and cheese and had a drink from a stream, then walked down the village street, pushing his bicycle. A woman was sweeping her front walk.
Do you know of a barn where some old carousel horses might be stored?
No, I'm sorry, son. I've never heard of one. He asked two more people with the same result. Then he came across a boy a few years older than himself, tinkering with his bicycle. He looked interested at the question and stood up, wrench in hand.
You're in luck. I happen to know. The shed's about a mile away near Orchard Farm. You'll know the place because it burned down a few years ago, and the farmer left. I looked through a crack in the door last autumn and saw something that might be what you're looking for.
Thanks a lot.
Silas got on his bicycle and rode up a long, gradual hill. Near the top were the blackened remains of a building and rows of apple trees. He left his bicycle by a stone gatepost and walked through the orchard. There, in the next field, was the building he had seen in his dream, unpainted, rickety, but with a tin roof gleaming in the sun. There was a rusty padlock on the door, but Silas, small and thin for his age, tugged a loose plank and slipped through.
The carousel was smaller than he had remembered. He climbed over the rubbish that cluttered the floor, the darkness pierced by endless sunbeams that found their way through the wide cracks. There was a snowdrop, the white horse, and Warrior, the gray one, and Magpie, the patched one. But when he had completed the circle, he saw a gap, an empty brass rod, very tarnished, connected only with the canopy above. That was Pegasus's empty place. His disappointment was overwhelming. He had often feared he might not find the barn, but once that was identified, he never doubted that Pegasus would be safe inside, waiting for him. He touched the dusty wooden nose of one of the horses. It felt cold. He slipped out the way he had come, wiping his dusty hands on his trousers. Then he heard the eager whinny of a horse. He looked up, and there in the next field was a black horse galloping towards the gate. Silas ran too. Moments later, he was stroking the soft black nose and looking into the nervous, rolling eyes he knew so well.
Pegasus! My wonderful Pegasus! You're more beautiful than ever!
He gently pulled the tuft of hair between Pegasus's ears, stroking him as he talked.
Have half my apple. Oh, you've left me a bite. Very well, we'll share it. Now you can have the core.
Pegasus pressed against the gate alongside it, whinnying and gently tapping with a front hoof as if impatient. He put his head over the gate and nibbled Silas's jacket.
You want me to get on your back? Of course I will. I didn't understand at first. I've never been so happy in my life. This is just like my dreams, only better, because it's true. Perhaps you dreamed the same dreams, and they've come true together.
Pegasus began to move gently, then changed to a trot, then a canter, then a full gallop. The ground flew beneath his pounding hoofs. Silas felt like a king, a god. Then, as they approached the far hedge, the blue sky swung down to meet them, and the grass flew up at the same time. A black curtain fell across Silas's eyes. He saw flashing lights like the lights of the fair and heard loud music. Then all was silence. When Silas opened his eyes, he saw a bright red blanket and heard a soft voice saying, "That's better, Silas. Lie quite still. Everything will be all right."
"Where am I?"
"You're in a hospital, and I'm a nurse."
"Why am I in the hospital? I am not ill."
"You had an accident and bumped your head. You'll soon be better." He put up his hand and felt an unfamiliar turban of bandages. "Try to sleep, Silas. Your aunt will be coming this afternoon. She comes to see you every day." He closed his eyes and he slept. A day later, he was well enough to ask more questions, and his aunt responded.
"You were found in a field by a hedge 20 miles from here. Whatever were you doing, Silas, so far away?"
In time, Silas explained his search for the old carousel, but he never mentioned Pegasus's name. That was his secret, his dream.
"There was one thing no one could understand. You were lying near a ditch where water lay, and on the wet ground there were the prints of horses' hooves. The owner of the field says he never let it for grazing. Do you remember a horse?"
"No, I don't remember."
But he did. He never forgot that last wild ride on his winged steed. Pegasus must have flown away, leaving him earthbound. Well, life goes on, and boys with concussions and 10 stitches in their heads leave hospitals and even go back to school. Silas never dreamed of Pegasus again, but he never forgot him, in the same way that he never forgot Blossom. What nobody expected was that he should grow up, still small and thin and pale, and become a famous jockey. His greatest success was to win the Derby on a horse called Pegasus,
a black horse, full of spirit. He had a way with horses, everyone said, a magical touch.
Thank you, Princess Tamalpa, for bringing your friends and such an exciting story. Now, what do you suppose might have happened if Little Red Riding Hood had run into Pegasus after seeing the wolf in the forest?
Well, she would have reached her grandmother's first.
Yes, and the story would have had a much different ending.
All aboard!
Marin Teacher's Store announces that September is Judy Bloom Month. And they've got a great selection of Judy Bloom books, including Super Fudge and the Judy Bloom Diary. Marin Teacher's Store has an enormous selection of books for kids of all ages, from toddlers to teens, and authors like Judy Bloom, Shel Silverstein, Ella Jenkins, and many, many more. Marin Teacher's Store is the store for kids and people who like kids. Marin Teacher's Store, 508 4th Street, San Rafael, between Irwin and Grand.
Oh, look. Look at the time. Well, children, we have to go, but we'll be back next week at 8:30 a.m. Remember to turn your dial to KTIM 1510 a.m. for Aunt Sally's Story Shop. And don't forget to invite your friends. Goodbye, everyone.
Sally's Story Shop is a creation of Gail Mills and Lily Iona Susi.
Hand in hand. Come in, children. Oh, Princess Tamalpa, you've arrived just in time, too. I'll bet you heard I was sharing a fairy tale this morning, one of the ones collected by the Brothers Grimm.
Yes, I did. Now, they collected and wrote down a lot of stories. Most of them had been told by one person to another for hundreds of years.
Yes, aren't we lucky to have them? Oh, Foxtail, you like fairy tales too, don't you?
Let's take a break for these announcements before we hear your story, Aunt Sally.
You've probably heard of Marin Teacher's Store. It's been in San Rafael for years, but you may not know the Marin Teacher's Store isn't just for teachers. It's a store for kids, too, and people who like kids. They have an experienced sales staff who can help you select the perfect gifts or educational tools for kids from toddlers to teens. They've got the latest titles in books and albums and toys and puzzles, and even Marin's biggest selection of scratch and sniff stickers. That's Marin Teacher Store, 508 4th Street in San Rafael, between Irwin and Grand.
What story are we going to hear this morning, Aunt Sally?
Well, I've chosen Rumpelstiltskin. If I can just get my bonnet away from Foxtail. Come here, you silly old cat. I need my bonnet so I can remember the story. Oh, okay, Foxtail, you sit on my lap. It'll be a softer place for you to curl up in anyway. Just let me get my bonnet on. That's it. Now I can begin. Imagine we are flying above the clouds, back in time. As we look down, the clouds part and we see a castle surrounded by green countryside. We are flying lower now. There's a river flowing through the countryside. Now we can see carts pulled by donkeys rattling up a dirt road to a house on the river. The house has a large water wheel turning with the flow of the river. It's a mill where wheat is ground into flour. Then we notice that the carts standing in line in front of the mill are loaded with large sacks, lumpy with grain, and the ones leaving from the side of the mill are laden with smooth sacks full of flour. Our story is about the man who runs this mill, the miller and his daughter. Once upon a time, a miller had a very beautiful daughter. Now it happened one day that he had an audience with the king. An audience is like a meeting. And in order to appear a person of some importance, he told the king that he had a daughter who could spin straw into gold.
What? Spin straw into gold? Now that's a talent worth having. If your daughter is clever as you say, bring her to my palace tomorrow and I'll put her to the test. Good morning, fair maiden. Here's your room full of straw, a spinning wheel, and a spindle. Now, you may begin work immediately, but if you haven't spun straw into gold by tomorrow morning, you'll die.
Oh, my! Oh, my! What in the world am I to do? I haven't the least idea how to spin straw into gold. Oh, dear! Oh, dear!
Good evening, Miss Millmaid. Why are you crying so bitterly?
Oh, little man, where did you come from?
No matter. What matters is that you are crying.
Oh, yes, I was. I have to spin all this straw into gold, and I haven't a notion how it's done. But if I don't, the king will kill me.
What will you give me if I spin it for you?
Can you? Will you?
Yes, but what will you give me?
Why, the most precious thing I own, my necklace.
A necklace? A necklace? Well, give it to me then.
Well, and here's the spinning wheel.
Yes, just move aside.
Then the little man sat himself down at the wheel, and whirr, the wheel went around three times, and the bobbin was full. Then he put on another, and whirr, the wheel went around three times, and the second was full too. And so it went on until the morning, when all the straw was spun away and all the bobbins were full of gold.
Your Highness,
Well, Miller Maid, you've been very busy, very busy. This is very fine gold. I must have more. Come, another room awaits you.
The king put the miller's daughter into another room full of straw, much bigger than the first.
Oh, no, there's so much straw.
Yes, and if you value your life, spin it all into gold before tomorrow's sun comes through this window. I'll see you then, my maid.
Oh, what will I do? What will I do?
What will you give me if I spin it for you again, fair maiden?
Oh, thank goodness. I'll give you the ring from my finger, and many thanks.
Keep your thanks, but give me the ring. Now stand aside.
The little man took the ring and whirr, whirr, round went the spinning wheel. And when morning broke, he had spun all the straw into glittering gold.
Good morning, Miller Maid. Ah, it is the magic of the morning sun, or is this straw really spun into pure gold? She's done it again. Three's a charm and none's the harm to me. Come, Miller Maid, one final room awaits thee.
Oh, dear, it's the biggest by far.
Yes, but the reward is great. If you spin all this gold tonight, you shall become my wife. She's only a miller's daughter, it's true, but I couldn't find a richer wife if I were to search the whole world over. Good night, Miller Maid. Tomorrow you may be queen.
Good night, Your Highness. Oh, little man, where are you?
Well, what'll you give me if I spin the straw for you one more time?
I've nothing more to give.
Then promise me, when you are queen, to give me your first child.
Who knows what will happen before that? Well, besides, what else can I do? All right. I promise to give you my first child. Now please start. There's so much to do tonight.
Never fear, little maid.
When the king came in the morning and found everything as he demanded and desired, he immediately made the miller's daughter his wife and queen. When a year had passed, a beautiful son was born to her. She thought no more of the little man until all of a sudden, one day, he stepped into her room.
Now, give me what you promised.
It's you, but surely you wouldn't take my son away. I'll give you 50 sacks of gold, 500 diamonds, rings for your fingers and toes if you'll only let me keep my baby.
I don't want your diamonds and gold nor your rings. A child is more precious than all the treasures in the world.
Oh, no, no, not my dear baby. Oh, you can't. You wouldn't.
Now, I am not cruel or unjust. I will give you a chance to keep your child. If you can guess my name in 3 days' time, you may keep your baby.
The queen didn't sleep that night for thinking of all the names she had ever heard. She sent a messenger throughout the land to gather names. The next day, the little man came.
Can you guess my name?
Let me see. Is it Casper?
That's not my name.
Well, is it Melchior?
No.
How about Belshazzar?
No.
And so it went. Not one of the names fit the little man. The next day, the queen sent the messenger throughout the land, gathering the most uncommon and extraordinary names he could find. When the little man came again, the queen's list sounded like this.
Is your name, perhaps, Sheepshank?
That's not my name.
Well, how about Crookshank?
That's not it.
Spindleshank?
No.
Now the queen was getting worried. She had only one more chance to guess this strange little man's name.
Messenger, I hope you have a long list for me today. It's my last chance.
Your Highness, I'm sorry, but my list is sorrowfully short. I wasn't able to find any new names, but as I came upon a high hill around the corner of the wood where the foxes and hares bid each other good night, I saw a little house. in front of the house burned a fire, and round the fire sprang the most grotesque little man, hopping on one leg and crying, "Tomorrow I brew, today I bake, and then the child away I'll take. For little knows the queen my fame, that Rumpelstiltskin is my name."
Messenger, you've done it. You've discovered his name. My child is saved. Oh, thank you, thank you.
Now, my lady queen, what's my name?
Is your name Conrad?
No.
Is your name Harry?
No.
Well, is your name perhaps Rumpelstiltskin?
What? What? Some demon has told you that. Some demon has told you that.
It's anger. It made him stamp his feet so hard, he's gone through the floor. Oh, what a dreadful smell comes from the hole. Oh, and flame. Oh, I can't look. Oh, thank God, all is quiet. He's gone, never to return. And my dear baby is safe.
What a strange little man. You know, Aunt Sally, I have another story about a girl who had something unusual happen when she used her spinning wheel.
How nice! I can't wait to hear it. But you know, I've been wondering if the children listening have ever seen a spinning wheel.
Probably not. If they wanted to see a picture of one, they could ask a librarian to show them.
Yes, spinning wheels and looms once were used for weaving all of our clothes, but that was before we had machines to do such things.
Well, I hope you all get a chance to see one.
Let's take a short break and then hear your story, Princess Tamalpa. Don't go away, children. We'll be right back.
You've probably heard of Marin Teacher's Store. It's been in San Rafael for years, but you may not know the Marin Teacher's Store isn't just for teachers. It's a store for kids, too, and people who like kids. They have an experienced sales staff who can help you select the perfect gifts or educational tools for kids from toddlers to teens. They've got the latest titles in books and albums and toys and puzzles, and even Marin's biggest selection of scratch and sniff stickers. That's Marin Teacher's Store, 508 4th Street in San Rafael, between Irwin and Grand.
Okay, Princess Tamalpa, are you ready with our story?
Yes, I am. And it's also from the Grimm Brothers collection. Its title is The Spindle, the Shuttle, and the Needle, and they behave very strangely in this story. Listen. There once was a girl whose father and mother died while she was still a little child. Luckily, she had a godmother who lived in a small house at the edge of the village, so the girl had someone to go live with. The godmother supported them both by spinning, weaving, and sewing. She showed the girl how to spin as well and taught her all she could about all that is good. When the girl was 15 years old, the old woman became ill and called her goddaughter to her bedside.
"My dear, you have been like a daughter to me. Since my end is drawing near, I leave you this little house. It will protect you from wind and weather. I also leave you my spindle, shuttle, and needle. You can earn enough by weaving to buy food and whatever else you'll need. Come closer to me, my dear. There, let me hold you for a moment. If you preserve the love of God in your heart, all will go well with you. Never fear."
The maiden wept bitterly, but her godmother's final words stayed with her, giving comfort and hope. She was a hard-working young woman and loved living in the little house, even though she was alone. She sang and hummed all day and far into the evening, and the blessing of the good old woman was on all that she did. It seemed as if the material she used for her weaving increased of its own accord, and whenever she wove a piece of cloth or carpet
or had made a shirt. She had once found a buyer who paid her amply for it, so that she was in want of nothing and even had enough left over to share with others. At about this time, the king's son was traveling about the country looking for a bride. He had been ordered not to choose a poor one, yet he didn't want to have a rich one, so he said,
"She shall be my wife, who is the poorest, and at the same time the richest."
Soon he arrived at the village where the maiden lived and stopped to question the villagers.
"Say there, who is the richest girl in your village, and who is the poorest?"
"The richest girl is sitting over there in the doorway of her house. Do you see her?"
"Oh, yes. And the poorest?"
"The poorest lives in a small house at the end of the village, all by herself."
The prince approached the richest girl. She got up, rushed to meet him, and made a low bow. The prince looked at her, said nothing, and rode on. The girl stamped her foot in a fit of anger and ran into the house and shut the door. The prince next came to the poor girl's house. She was sitting in her little room at her spinning wheel, busily spinning. The prince stared through the window at the girl working. A moment later, she looked up, and when she saw that the prince was watching her, she blushed all over her face. Then she lowered her eyes and continued spinning until the king's son had ridden away again. After he had left, she jumped up and ran to the window.
"Oh, dear, he's gone. Did I scare him away?"
She looked after him until she could no longer see the white feathers in his hat.
"Well, I'll never see him again, I'm sure."
Then she sat down to work again on her spinning, the memory of the prince's handsome face remaining before her. Before long, a saying of her godmother's came into her mind, and she sang the words to herself.
"Spindle, my spindle, run them away, and bring to my house the prince I do pray."
To the maiden's amazement, the spindle sprang out of her hand in an instant and bolted out the door. She jumped up and looked after it, and there it was, dancing and bobbing merrily into the open country, with a shining golden thread following behind. It wasn't long before it had vanished completely from her sight. Since she now had no spindle, the girl took the weaver's shuttle in her hand, sat down at her loom, and began to weave. Meanwhile, the spindle danced continually onwards, and just as the golden thread ended, it reached the prince.
"What is this? A spindle urging me to follow it? I wonder where the thread will lead me."
Being a curious fellow, the prince turned his horse about and followed the golden thread. While the prince was following the thread, the girl was in her house sitting at her work and singing.
"Shuttle, my shuttle, weave well this day, and guide the prince to me, I do pray."
Immediately the shuttle leaped from her hand and out the door. Right at the entrance, however, it began to weave a carpet that was more beautiful than anything she had ever seen. Lilies and roses blossomed on both sides of it, and in the center there was golden ground where green branches grew. Under the branches were squirrels and rabbits, and deer stretched their heads through the leaves above them. It was a little paradise. The shuttle continued to leap here and there, with new life appearing wherever it landed. The girl once again sat down to sew. She held the needle in her hand and she sang,
"Needle, my needle, sharp pointed and fine, prepare for the prince this house of mine."
Then the needle leaped out of her fingers. It flitted about the room as quick as lightning, covering tables and benches with green cloth and the chairs with velvet. It even hung the windows with silken curtains.
"I can't believe what I'm seeing. My poor little house is being changed into a place fit for a princess. And my, there's the prince coming up the walkway on his horse."
And so he was, still following the golden thread that had brought him there.
When he reached the doorway, he got off his horse and stepped over the carpet into the house. The maiden stood before him in her poor patched clothes, but she shone out from within them as brilliantly as the golden thread.
I realize that you are the poorest and also the richest. Will you be my bride?
The maiden, overcome with joy, could not speak, so she offered her hand instead. He led her to his horse, helped her on, and together they rode to the royal castle. There they were married, but they frequently returned to the little house at the edge of the village where the spindle, shuttle, and needle were waiting to be called on again.
So that's how you catch a prince.
Oh, Foxtail, sometimes I think you really do understand us. But you'll have to be quiet for a minute while we break for an announcement.
You've probably heard of Marin Teacher's Store. It's been in San Rafael for years, but you may not know the Marin Teacher's Store isn't just for teachers. It's a store for kids, too, and people who like kids. They have an experienced sales staff who can help you select the perfect gifts or educational tools for kids from toddlers to teens. They've got the latest titles in books and albums and toys and puzzles, and even Marin's biggest selection of scratch and sniff stickers. That's Marin Teacher Store, 508 4th Street in San Rafael, between Irwin and Grand.
We're almost out of time, children, but I want to remind you that Princess Tamalpa and I would love to hear from you. Yes, you could write us letters, and you could send them to KTIM. The address is 1623 5th Avenue in San Rafael. I'll repeat that for you. It's 1623 5th Avenue in San Rafael. And don't forget to tune in next Sunday at 8:30 a.m. to Aunt Sally's Story Shop on KTIM, 1510 a.m. Goodbye, everybody. Goodbye, Princess Tamalpa. Aunt Sally's Story Shop is a creation of Gail Wittenmeyer Mills and Lily Iona Susi. The production director is Joel Abrams.
Children are